From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast.
Why is everything here completely pointless?
Candy doesn't have to have a point. That's why it's Candy.
Charlie Bucket's astute observation about candy and chocolate in Willy Wonka's factory is as true as it gets about chocolate. We don't need it, it's mostly pointlessly eaten, and really we can do fine without it. But then, what fun would life be? Despite us having no intention of giving up on the dessert that comes in bars, is coated on ice creams, or can be had as a drink, multiple indicators hint that we might have to make some compromises. Skyrocketing cocoa prices have companies talking of raising prices, while some already have. Companies say the prices of many cocoa-based ingredients are up by 70 to 80%. Large chocolate manufacturers like Mondelez, Hershey's and Nestle, as well as local bean-to-bar chocolate makers and biscuit manufacturers, say they might have to raise prices as global cocoa prices hit new highs. The world's biggest cocoa producers in Africa, Ivory Coast and Ghana, have seen factories stop or cut processing of cocoa because they can no longer afford to buy the beans. There have been 3 years of poor cocoa harvest, and the fourth year isn't expected to be any better. So are we in for a chocolate apocalypse? My colleague Jairaj Singh spoke with Vikram Doctor, who is one of India's foremost food writers, to understand what all of this means for our daily bar. He explains why cocoa goes through frequent boom and bust cycles that rarely benefit the cocoa farmers, and whether we are in for a chocolate drought. We started by asking Vikram Doctor about chocolate's history, and how it became the default sweet of our times, from being a prized drink for the aristocracy.
If there's one thing that, you know, brings a smile on all children's faces, it's the word chocolate. Can you give us a short history of how it is made, where it comes from, and why everyone seems to love it?
Okay, well, the chocolate plant, the Theobroma plant, is from the upper Amazon region. And it was discovered and became a major commodity of trade through Central America and Mexico and, you know, the upper parts of South America, which was when the Europeans discovered it. And it was used as a beverage at that time, not as the chocolate that we know of today. The beans were crushed and mixed, usually with actually chili, which is also native from that region. And it gave this sort of beverage that was nothing at all like the chocolate that we know today, but still somehow was stimulating and comforting, and people loved. The chocolate beans were taken back to Europe, and bit by bit, a demand grew for it. And over the centuries, like, people came up with innovations, which finally led to the chocolate that we know today. You know, people found ways to grind the beans, to add milk and cream to them. And finally, we've ended up with the chocolate bar that is so beloved today. But it's taken centuries, and it is an incredibly complicated process. And this is very important to know, because a lot of the problems with chocolates come from the fact that it is very complicated. It's not just a question of grinding the beans. The beans have to be fermented. They have to be fermented to the right point. Then they have to be deshelled. Then they have to be ground. Then there are various processes that happen afterwards before we come anywhere near the chocolate that we know today.
Does the chocolate that we eat today retain any of its health values? Does it have a medicinal aspect to it at all?
Any medicinal aspect of cacao is counteracted by the amount of sugar and fat that we're eating with it. So yeah, I mean, it's nice to think that it's medicinal, but not really. I have a friend in Chennai, Nitin Chordia, who is the man I call Mr. Chocolate in India, who is my go-to source for information on anything chocolate related. And he produces something that is called ceremonial cacao, which is basically grinding the cacao beans in the way that it was ground originally in South America. So if anybody wants to try that sort of chocolate, and maybe it has health benefits, it's a very interesting, very fruity tasting product. It's very different from the chocolate that we know today.
We've been hearing about a cocoa shortage for some time now, but can you tell us about the mess that we are in presently?
The basic problem with chocolate comes from the fact that it is a very complicated product, both to grow and to process. It grows only in a very narrow range of tropical climate around the equator. So there are very few places that can grow cacao properly. So that's one problem. Secondly, it's not a very productive crop. I mean, each tree produces only about 20 pods. And it's also a very temperamental crop. I mean, there are all sorts of diseases that are like witch's broom, which like attack cacao trees. And unfortunately, this is exactly, this tropical region is the one that's being most affected by climate change. And it seems that climate change, beyond just making these areas extremely hot, is also encouraging the growth of new kinds of pathogens which are attacking cacao trees. Secondly, once it's grown, it has to be, the beans have to be fermented, they have to then to be ground. And then finally, there is this process called conching, where the beans have to be ground very, very, very slowly through stone grinders in a way to distribute the fat around the cocoa nubs. And unfortunately, maybe this is fortunately, I mean, you know, our palates are very receptive to cocoa. We can taste minute differences in the way cocoa has been produced, you know, which is why we've often come across chocolate that just tastes bad to us. And it's because, unfortunately, our palates are very sensitive to chocolate. So this whole process of making chocolate is an incredibly complicated one, much more complicated than with coffee and tea, for example.
Vikram Doctor says that the cocoa trade and the chocolate business has been controlled by some companies and speculators for decades. He explains how chocolate was promoted in India as a crop for farmers to make money, only for them to be left high and dry when they invested time and money in it. He says that's a model that's been followed across the globe.
So what this means is that the industry is controlled by cacao manufacturers. Here I'm not just talking about companies like Cadbury's, which was one of the first big international global companies, but also sort of intermediary companies like this Swiss-Belgian company called Barry Calbo, which is now one of the biggest companies that control the processing of chocolate. And essentially what happens is that for decades, these companies dictated the way cacao was grown and processed. You know, it was a complete sort of buyer's or producer's monopoly. I mean, in India is a good example. We never grew cacao. The first cacao that came to India was around the 1950s as part of a scheme from Cadbury's to encourage the global spread of cacao growing, because they wanted to more sources of chocolate, so they no longer depend on their main source, which is actually West Africa. And again, that's interesting because, as I said, this is a South American plant, but West Africa has become the biggest grower of cacao. One country, Ivory Coast, which is a tiny country, accounts for like a huge amount of the world's production. Ghana and then Nigeria come next. And you know what you understand from this is that cacao was a colonial product. It was brought to West Africa, which were all mostly British or French colonies, and it was developed there as a colonial product. It was forced on the farmers over there, who didn't actually particularly want to grow it, because they saw it as competing with their long-term, own crops. But they were forced by colonial powers to grow cacao. And this imbalance has been the problem with cacao all along, that the growers have very little power, and the buyers and the producers have huge amounts. And, you know, in a way, that's what's happened in India. So Cadbury's seriously committed to growing cacao in India, in Kerala, which is where they identified as the best location to grow cacao. And they planted the imported trees, all came from Cadbury's. Cadbury's got the saplings. Cadbury's showed farmers how to grow it. Cadbury showed farmers how to ferment it. And they started growing cacao in Kerala in the 1960s. And it was very promising. And, you know, farmers were excited. They were like, oh my God, this could be a great new cash crop. But then what happens? Internationally, all these efforts, there is a glut. And suddenly in the early 1970s, Cadbury's finds itself with many sources of cheap cacao. And basically they abandon the Kerala farmers. And the farmers are like, what is this? A cacao tree takes about 3 to 4 years to grow. We've put in all this effort, and now you're abandoning us or trying to buy a beans a dirt cheap. And unfortunately, this is a cycle that decade after decade after decade repeats itself with cacao. So, you know, while at the moment we're seeing all these stories about a huge spike in production, I looked at stories that I'd written exactly 10 years back. And 10 years back, I was writing about a huge spike in cacao sales. And this is the problem, that cacao is monopsony, you know, I think that's the correct word, of buyers who control the trade, of commodity traders above all, who speculate in cacao. Cacao is one of the most profitable commodities for commodity traders to speculate in. And what this always ends up having is that there are these boom and bust cycles. farmers lose out big time, consumers will have to pay more, and a few commodity traders become incredibly rich.
Right now, many companies that make chocolates and ice cream, like Amul and Baskin Robbins, they're saying that they're trying to hold off hiking the price and talk about, you know, hoping to ride this wave. But are there sort of cheaper derivatives of chocolate to be found right now?
I mean, definitely. And you know, unfortunately, one of the problems is that people are already using them. So, for example, there are many different types of chocolate. And that's one reason why chocolate tastes so different depending on the country you get it. Like for many of us, we really love the taste of European chocolate. And that's because European chocolate is made with dairy fat. But in India, a lot of chocolate is what is called compound chocolate, which is where the cocoa butter is removed because cocoa butter is a very valuable product and is used in cosmetics and many other industries. So, you know, the producers can sell that separately. And cocoa butter is also not very shelf stable in a hot climate. It melts very easily. It's the reason why cocoa butter is such a wonderful product is that it melts at the temperature of the human mouth, which is why when we put a piece of chocolate, especially made with cocoa butter, it melts beautifully because it's at the right temperature of our bodies. But also that also means it's not a very shelf-stable product. So what producers in India tend to do is that they replace cocoa butter with other plant-based fats, you know, like shea butter or there are various other plant-based fats, which are cheaper and which are more shelf-stable. Cadbury's, for instance, does something slightly different. Their chocolate is based on something called chocolate crumb, which is made by cooking the cocoa powder along with milk to a reduced sort of product, with condensed milk. And that's why you get that very distinctive Cadbury's dairy milk, cooked milk flavor. This varies from country to country. Americans, and it's also what we're used to. I mean, Americans like a chocolate Hershey's, which for most people in the world is completely disgusting because it has this weird, slightly sour milk taste. And that's what Americans are used to. For most of the world, I mean, that is not even chocolate. We are going to find people, you know, experimenting with more and more different types of chocolates. We are going to find more and more chocolates, you know, where chocolate is used to coat rather than a full chocolate like a Cadbury's dairy milk. You know, we'll have chocolate-coated products. We'll have what I call inclusions, basically, you know, almonds and dried fruits and things like that, all of which help bring down the cost because you're using less actual chocolate.
While chocolates from Cadbury's, Nestle and Amul are mass-produced and available across the country, India now has a range of smaller chocolate firms that make artisanal chocolates. Vikram Doctor explains to Jairaj how a device made for a completely different dish in South India made it much easier to make artisanal chocolates.
In the last decade or so, we've seen this new wave of Indian chocolatiers who have transformed locally sourced cacao into artisanal chocolates. We're seeing that, you know, that they're trying to get the nutrients out while limiting the unhealthy ingredients, like you mentioned, like refined sugar. And can you tell us about this new crop of chocolatiers and what is it? Have they changed the game for Indian chocolates?
To some extent, I mean, they've proven that it's possible to make really good quality chocolate in India, but it's still a pretty niche market. And it's big on certain times of the year, like Diwali and for gifting. But is it really mass market? I think that's a bit of a question mark. These new chocolatiers fall into two categories, okay? One are chocolatiers using chocolate that is provided for them by the large companies, specifically in this case, Barry Callebaut, which has set up a huge factory in Bombay and is making raw sort of chocolate, which then can be bought by these chocolatiers and they will remake it into the sort of chocolate flavors and bars that they want. But they're not actually producing the chocolate themselves from scratch. They're using the Barry Callebaut. And, you know, full credit to Barry Callebaut that they have really been very aggressive about this. So a lot of what we see as chocolate is actually, you know, chocolate from companies like Barry Callebaut. And I think there are one or two others. So that's one thing. And that's good. But it's not the same as what we call bean to bar, where you're doing the whole thing yourself. Now, there has been a growth of bean to bar chocolate. And this is actually unexpectedly a very interesting story from an Indian perspective because it actually comes down to Italy's. The real source of innovation has actually been Italy grinders over here. Those stone grinders, what we call wet grinders, which have these two stones instead of big steel drum and you put your soaked rice and the dal and the thing and then it grinds and then you get your Italy batter and you ferment it. Now, Italy grinders are one of these quietly revolutionary Indian products. People don't realize this. They were developed, obviously, in Tamil Nadu, the great home of the Italy. They were developed, sometime from the 1950s onwards, specifically in Coimbatore, probably because it had a large machine-making factories. And the story is that it was developed by a young man who had just got married and felt very sad when he saw his wife having to grind the batter every day. So since he had a small company, he decided to find a way to try and mechanize this. And he created the first mechanized wet grinder. And over the decades, there have been various innovations from Coimbatore. The much more unexpected side of the story is that wet grinders have revolutionized chocolate making, artisanal chocolate making around the world. And it comes back to around 2003 or so, when a wet grinder manufacturer in Coimbatore, whose name is Mr. Ashwin Kumar, got a call from a chocolate maker whose name is John Nancy, who is based in the Pacific Northwest in the USA. Now, John Nancy, who I'd interviewed for a story many years back, was an interesting character. He was a guy who liked making everything from scratch himself. And whenever a big manufacturer told him, oh, you can't do it, you're too small, he took that as a challenge to try to do it. So, he was a guy who would make his own beer and make his own bread and something like that. And then he finally got interested in chocolate. And with chocolate, for sure, he was told by these companies that it's just too complicated, you can't do it yourself. Yes, you could get the beans, etc., and do all that, but what you cannot do is the conching. And as I said, conching is often mixed up with grinding, but it's not grinding. It's a much more slow process. And what it does is essentially it distributes the fat very evenly across the cacao molecules. So the cacao molecules are the one that give us the taste of chocolate, but the fat is what gives us that beautiful mouthfeel of chocolate. And both of them are important. I mean, if you want to taste what just cacao is, you can just taste a spoonful of cocoa powder and it's horrible. It's bitter and you want to spit it out.
Vikram Doctor says that John Nancy was looking for a grinder and Coimbatore had idli grinders. But despite it seeming like an obvious match, there were big problems.
But John Nancy was a stubborn guy. So he went online. This was also when the internet was just starting. And he started researching stone grinders and mechanical stone grinders. And the only thing he could find was way across on the other side of the world in Tamil Nadu, there were stone grinders for idlis. So he started cold calling. And one person he called was this Mr. Ashwin Kumar, who didn't take this call seriously. I mean, honestly, somebody from the US is calling you to say, can I make chocolate in idli grinders? And who's going to take him seriously? But whatever, he was willing to listen to take the thing. And so they started working and they set up prototypes. And it wasn't easy because, a wet grinder for an idli works for about, 40 minutes, 1 hour or so. Whereas for chocolate, you need to grind for almost 24 hours, sometimes 2 days, very slow grinding. And basically what happened is in the early prototypes, the motors just blew out. But luckily for Ashwin Kumar and John Nancy, they were both decided to commit to this product. And they slowly came up with a product that finally became the first tabletop chocolate conching machine, a chocolate grinding machine. Okay, I mean, there are various differences. So the technical term is a mélanger. So it's a chocolate mélanging machine. But it's good enough. A chocolate mélanger can give you pretty much an approximation of the taste of the sort of conched chocolate that a Barry Callebaut or Valrhona can give you. And this has actually been revolutionary. I mean, Ashwin Kumar then started exporting his machines across the world. I mean, if in Coimbatore, this is now an established category. Artisanal chocolate making machines are exported from Coimbatore around the world. And in India too. And artisanal chocolate makers like Navi Luna or Paul and Mike or all these new people, we have the benefit of knowing that, right across and from within India itself, you could get these artisanal chocolate machines that people across the world were importing at huge costs. And this has really revolutionized chocolate making. Cacao growing has actually been growing. It's no longer Kerala. Now Andhra is the biggest grower of cacao. So we are growing decent quality beans in India. There is now knowledge of how to ferment and roast them properly. And we also have the machines. So yes, I mean, partly because of this really weird coincidence of us being able to adapt idli grinders to making artisanal chocolate, really Indian market for chocolate has opened up.
Vikram Doctor says the price of cocoa rising isn't a bad thing if it benefits farmers. He says the problem is that the system is loaded in such a way that no matter whether the prices go up or down, it's the farmers who usually lose out.
it should be a good thing that chocolate prices are rising, at least for farmers, if farmers actually get to see that revenue, and that will increase their commitment to growing and keep growing chocolate. What will be a problem is if this just becomes another bust. I've spoken again with Nitin Chordia, who works closely with farmers in Andhra Pradesh. And he says, you know, now all farmers are sophisticated. They have phones. They can see this, the headlines saying like chocolate prices. And they're like, yeah, we want some of that. And that's great. They need to get a share of that. But unfortunately, that has always been the problem with the chocolate industry. The speculators and the big companies grab those profits and it doesn't make its way back to farmers. And what really needs to happen is farmers need to get a better share. One of the problems, you know, Nitin confided in me is that farmers are seeing these headlines about soaring chocolate prices. And they think that they are going to get these huge prices and they're going to keep getting it. This is not going to happen. You know, at the very best, they will get a little bit of extra profit. Hopefully, they will get extra profit. But at some point, it is going to crash. Okay, at some point, new sources of chocolate will be found, new sources, the speculators will release the stocks that they're hoarding onto into the market, and the price will crash. I mean, this has always been the cycle with chocolate, and it has led to a lot of disappointed farmers who just give up on growing chocolate. And that ironically, that benefits the speculators even more, because that creates the next scarcity, where they again like hoard chocolates. I mean, what needs to happen is to break the cycle of boom and bust in cacao prices. And that's very difficult. I mean, like dealing with commodity markets is one of the most difficult things in the world.
But do you foresee a chocolate apocalypse in our lifetime?
Absolutely not. Those are ridiculous headlines. Yes, chocolate is facing a lot of problems. They said climate change is a huge issue. But what that simply means when it's a product that is in such high demand is that new areas will open up. Yes, the diseases are a problem, but you know that's something plant scientists work with all the time. What really needs to be solved is a way to end this speculative trade in cacao. And we will never be able to eliminate it entirely. That's the nature of the beast with commodities trade. But we need to make sure that farmers across the world get a better return. And if that happens, we may end up with a more stabilized cacao market, which will mean, yes, a slightly more expensive chocolate. And we will probably have to end up spending more for chocolate. And maybe that will mean that we will start eating better chocolate because it will become a treat rather than something we just do at short notice. But in the long term, the market will change. But you know, for a product that is so much in demand, that people love so much, there's no way it's going to disappear.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI+, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.